Welcome back to Page of the Wind, the podcast where we read Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind page by page. This is page 258. Arladin, I supplied. The name sounded strange to me after all these years. Master Loren turned to look in my direction, blinking once. Son of Arladin is admitted into the university for the continuance of his education on the 43rd of Equus. His admission into the Arcanum, contingent upon proof that he has mastered the basic principles of sympathy, official sponsor being one Kilvin, Master Artificer. His tuition shall be set at the rate of less 3 talents. I felt a great dark weight settle inside me. 3 talents might as well be all the money in the world for any hope I had of earning it before the term began. Working in kitchens, running errands for pennies, I might be able to save that much in a year, if I was lucky. I held the desperate hope that I could cut purse that much in time, but I knew the thought to be just that, desperate. People with that sort of money generally knew better than to leave it hanging in a purse. I didn't realize that the masters had left the table until one of them approached me. I looked up to see the master archivist approaching me. Loren was taller than I would have guessed, over 6.5 feet. His long face and hands made him look almost stretched. When he saw he had my attention, he asked, "Did you say your father's name was Arladin?" He asked it very calmly, with no hint of regret or apology in his voice. It suddenly made me very angry that he should stifle my ambitions of getting into the university, then come over and ask about my dead father, as easy as saying good morning. "Yes," I said tightly. "Arladin the Bard?" My father always thought of himself as a trooper. He never called himself bard or minstrel. Hearing him referred to in that way irritated me even more, if that were possible. I didn't deign to reply, merely nodded once, sharply. If he thought my response terse, he didn't show it. I was wondering which troop he performed in. My thin restraint burst. "Oh, you were wondering," I said with every bit of venom my troop-sharpened tongue could muster. "Well, maybe you can wonder a while longer. I'm stuck in ignorance now. I think you can abide a while with a..." And Quoth's angry rant shall be finished on the next page, because that's the end of this one. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Jordana.
And I'm Nick. And this page bothers me.
But it does... It will confuse, but then reward the smart reader.
Why does this page bother you, Nick?
Sorry, Jordana, before I go into that, can you explain what you mean by that?
It is written on the page that he is admitted into the university for 3...
At the rate of less 3 talents.
He is upset that he has to pay 3 talents.
He has misheard.
Exactly, but the close reader is rewarded here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that. So what bothers me here, there's a number of things that bother me here. For one thing, Loren is coming up and basically admitting to Quoth, "I know your father. I know something about your father. Let's talk about that." And Quoth is too busy being upset to clue into this and follow this thread.
Is that something that bothers you about Quoth, though?
It bothers me about Quoth. It bothers me about the fact that Quoth never comes back and says, "Oh, hey, you know my father. Can we talk about that?" It bothers me because it feels like a low... feels like a cheap trick played by the author, and it's also something that, to me anyway, doesn't feel true. I think that a foundational part of fiction is that your main character shouldn't behave in a way that your reader wouldn't. And I mean, this is one of those rules that, you know, that you can obviously break once you understand the rule. But like,
the quote does lots of things that...
Sure, okay, but like, it needs to make sense. Your reader has to nod along and go, the reason you behave that way, and it makes sense that you behave that way. But I feel that this outburst, it doesn't really make sense that he behaves that way, especially when it's his father, there's some information on the line, and then he never comes back to. Now, reading it again, I see that this is an example of Quoth falling victim to Nalt's fallacy. He's acting before he knows the whole story, before he has all the information, or before he's fully processed all the information. So this is a little bit more forgivable for me, but I'm still bothered by it, especially because Quoth never comes back and asks again.
I have 2 responses to that, but before I respond, Jordana, do you have anything you want to say in response to Nick?
In response to Nick, no, I do have lots of notes.
Okay. So, first of all, I think that Quoth's reaction is entirely justified based on what I know about his character and the emotional position that he's put in. He's put all of his hopes on this one thing that he believes has been denied him.
And the best way to change their mind is to be a real snarky.
Well, no, he's lost. He has every right to be angry. Like, he's not going to get in. He's f***ed as far as he's concerned. He is going to be pissed. And so he, and then this guy comes up and brings up his dead dad, who he still hasn't really dealt with. I'd be pissed too, and I'd probably make an angry outburst. It's not the right thing to do, or like the smart thing, but it's the emotionally understandable thing to do. Also, you, sir, are making a huge assumption that I completely disagree with. There is no reason to believe that Lauren knows his father personally.
He says
Arladin the Bard. That could mean that he's like a famous musician that people have heard of.
Sure.
In the same with like, your dad is Mick Jagger? Cool. I saw him play in the 60s.
But no, hey, we have no reason to believe that Arladin is nearly that famous.
And we have no reason to believe that Lauren knows him personally.
Yeah, but this is still a thread that Quoth should pull. We also know that Lauren has people out in the world seeking stories.
Eh. Which I think this is completely unimportant and will never come up again.
You're saying that to bother me. There's no
way. No, I actually don't think it's that important.
Don't May believe I? That at all. There's hang on. Okay, sorry, Trinette. Go ahead.
Considering Lauren has people out in the world who are looking for stories, I understand that, sure, this is a thread that Quoth would regularly pull. Granted. But on the hand of Jeremy's thing, like, he is lost right now. He is very upset. He's not going to act like he would normally act. And he may not remember the details of that conversation because it is colored in his memory by his emotions.
Yeah, he's not going to remember that Lauren, like, you know, he's just going to remember, like, oh my god, the relief that is about to happen.
Ugh, but it's such a... Ugh.
It's, for me, it's
such a great opportunity for Quoth that he just squanders by being...
Yes, and you, the reader, so know Quoth, you have squandered this opportunity, but it makes emotional sense for the character to do it. In the same way that, this is something we were talking about earlier, in the latest Avengers film, Infinity War, I'm not going to spoil it for Jordana, who hasn't seen it yet.
If you spoil it, I will murder you.
But characters make bad decisions, wrong decisions, based on their emotions, but because I understand why they're feeling the way I feel... Sorry, why they're feeling the way they feel... Even though I'm shaking my head going, oh, that was a stupid thing to do, character, I understand why you did it, and I probably would have done the same.
That's, like, how I feel a lot about that other Avengers movie where Iron Man fights Captain America for stupid reasons because they can't get along.
But they have really good reasons to fight. The reasons to fight are very understandable.
Yes, but...
But we wish...
They could just... They just gotta figure it out. They don't have to beat the crap out of each other. God.
That's how they figure it out.
Okay, fine.
I want to say one thing and then I'm going to shut up because Jordana hasn't really had a chance to talk.
I do have the notes.
I think that the phrasing of his tuition shall be set at the rate of less 3 talents is deliberately confusing. It makes sense when you read it, but it's a weird way to phrase that idea. It's somewhat old fashioned, and so it makes sense that Quoth mishears it or misunderstands it.
And to be totally fair, when I first read that, I also misunderstood it.
Yes, me too. Jordana, you have notes.
I do. It is the 43rd of Equus, or is that what... Yeah, 43rd of Equus. So that kind of gives us an idea of the month.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make a note of that. His official sponsor is Kilbin, so he doesn't need the book.
No. So, like, presumably... Oh.
Because wouldn't his official sponsor regularly be Ben?
I guess,
but he probably needs someone to sign off on the actual.
Yeah, I guess Ben's book is not good enough for them.
Okay, so they need the book and Kilbin to be a sponsor. So you need both. Okay. Quoth is a moody teen, and it feels very human.
Yeah.
And
I definitely, I don't know about you, but I definitely went along the emotional roller coaster journey of this page the first time I read this book. I was like, oh my god, he didn't get in. Oh my god, what's he gonna do? I'd be mad too. And then, as we'll find out on the next page, it's not that bad.
Also, important note. I think we talked about this before. Quoth, when he has to fill in, like, Quoth the son of Arladin, he is not last name Arladin's son. He is Quoth the son of Arladin.
Yes.
So he does get referred to as Arladin's son down the line.
Yeah, but it's like two words. It's not like the Norse.
No, Arladin's. I never said it was the Norse.
Nor did I.
Okay.
But we did have that discussion where we weren't sure if Arludinson was his last name.
Keep telling you it's Lackless.
I know, but I just, for the sake of reference back to our early episodes, on this page, and thus far, we have not seen his last name referred to as Arludinson. So we don't know what his last name is, slash it could be Lackless.
And it's worth pointing out that if ever there was a time for us to hear Quoth's full name, now would probably be the time when they ask, what's your name?
Why are we still having this discussion? We've established that only nobles have actual last names.
We have not
put that forward as a theory, sir.
It's not solid.
It's solid as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, well, we're not all Nick.
You always think you're right.
Legions of readers, write in and tell me I'm right.
Or not.
I keep saying readers when I mean listeners, but I guess you're also reading along. It's fine.
That is it for my notes. Please feel free to jump in, gentlemen.
I mean, I think Kilvin sponsoring him is another reason why we get to feel good about Kilvin in this chapter. It's like, clearly Kilvin is on Quoth's side.
Yeah, that sort of feels like hey, you were kind of feeling that this guy was cool. Well, here's the proof that yes, in fact, he is.
It also kind of bucks convention. You would expect that Quoth to excel at naming right away and have the namer be the one who brings him in, but he doesn't excel at naming right away. It's really hard for him.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And it's not the namer who brings him in. Are you done? You guys done?
I have something
else I want to talk about, and that is, there is no way, Jeremy, that you think that Lauren knowing Arludin is not important.
Are you back
I do.
On this?
I actually don't think it's important.
How
enough.
Can you possibly think that? How can this
never
just
comes
be
up
a
again.
Detail? Not yet.
Not well, you yet. Know what? If it does come up again, then I'll be pleasantly surprised.
Good, because we have this guy, Quoth's mysterious father, who stole daughters from nobles, who's going around gathering this story. Why is he gathering the story? What put him on the track of the story in the first place?
Nope. Okay, never mind. That I had a theory, and then I just realized that it doesn't work at all, so never mind.
And the master archivist knows him by name? I mean, there's a lot of bards out there. Now, okay, maybe he's just written some good music, and Lauren knows it, but that's still worth paying attention to.
Yeah.
Quick note, Nick is doing that thing again.
Yes, I'm gesticulating wildly, and correctly so. Listeners, write in and tell me I'm right. Now, speaking
Or write it and tell me he's wrong and just watch the sparks fly.
So,
if steam shoots out of his ears, we will take a picture.
Yep.
Now, speaking of which, today's letter is about both me mistaking the listeners for readers and about how right I am. So, this is a letter from Daniel. The subject is, Dear Loyal Readers. The first line is, in brackets, I know it's hard, but we're the listeners and you're the readers. Okay. I recently finished episode 166, and I wanted to say that I am 100% with Jeremy on this one.
What?
If Rothfuss uses Quoth's entire backstory as a gotcha and makes everything he's done meaningless, it's going to be a huge disappointment. It would also be a huge betrayal of how the book advertises itself on the back cover. Spoiler alert, I haven't actually read the book, because I am a hundo P with Nick on the back of the book. It advertises a kind of story I didn't want to read. Plus, I'm enjoying hearing it from you guys.
Oh no, we are spoiling so much for you.
Well, we've always wondered.
He consented to being spoiled.
We've always wondered if, you know, what somebody's experience would be like listening to the podcast without having read the book.
Perhaps Daniel should come on our podcast.
Maybe. Daniel goes on to say, however, this isn't a story about a hero doing hero things. This is a story about stories, what they mean, and how they come to be accepted. I think that's precisely what Rothfuss is going for. He's telling a story that everyone accepts as fact, and he's going to pull out the rug to make a great point about the nature of story. I'm really interested to hear what he has to say on that point. Definitely, though, a book with a bad ending, by which I mean, usually, one that doesn't deliver on its promises, sours the whole book. But I think what's been promised here is a comment on the nature of a story, and that's what will cause Quoth to grow rather than nullify his story. With that said, before I ask you guys a question, I want to know... I know how much you like hearing about yourselves, so here's some achievements I think you've unlocked. Nick, most facts accepted as BS achievement. Jeremy, most BS accepted as facts achievement. Jordana, most beaker noises made achievement.
What's a beaker noise?
You know, a beaker from the Muppets. Daniel, all of these are incredibly accurate. 100% Jordana is definitely the beaker of this podcast.
I don't do that.
Side note, whenever I hear the word Telen for people from the Church of Telu, it evokes the words Telen and Felon, which I don't think are accidents.
Ooh.
Which words?
Talon, as in claw, and felon, as in criminal.
Got it.
The question I wanted to ask is, what is the deal with so-called magic systems these days? They all seem like alternative science, especially everyone's favorite series, Mistborn. Name of the Wind is about the same style. You do an action, you get a result. Is it even right to call them magic? I like what Tolkien says about fairy stories here. A fairy story is one, and this is quoting Tolkien, a fairy story is one which touches on or uses fairy, whatever its own main purpose may be, satire, adventure, morality, fantasy. Fairy itself may perhaps be most nearly translated by magic, but it is a magic of a peculiar mood and power at the furthest pole from the vulgar devices of the laborious scientific magician. It seems like we don't use magic in that way anymore. Why do you think that is in Name of the Wind, and is it appropriate? Thanks, guys. Keep on keeping on. Thank you, Daniel, for writing, first off.
And what a great letter. So I want to touch on the magic question before we forget it. And I think we've talked about it a bit on the podcast before, but I think it's worth talking about because it's important to, like, the broader discussion of fantasy literature. And Rothfuss talks about it, too, especially if you listen to his podcast with Max Temkin, Unintended Consequences, which is well worth your time. Because if nothing else, you get to listen to Patrick Rothfuss's mellifluous
baritone.
Yeah. Oh, he has a voice like melting butter. It's beautiful. But he talks about how he sort of gets to have his cake and eat it, too, in these books, because he does have a fairly well-described magic system that is explicable and in some ways rational, right? You're right. Like, you do a thing and you get a result and you can repeat it and experiment with it and it'll work the same way every time, right? And it is like a science. And I personally find those systems terribly dull. But they do what they allow, and what Patrick Rothfuss describes them as allowing, is you can impress the reader with a character's cleverness, because once the reader understands the same rules that the character understands, like, this is how sympathy works, then when we see the character do, like, break those rules or do something interesting or risky or use them in an interesting way, we, the reader, are rewarded with the knowledge. It's like, I imagine it's much like, you know how baseball works, and I have no idea. So we can watch the same baseball game, and you will go, oh, that was a great play. And I will go, I saw a ball move. Because I won't understand what made that a special play. And I think that's what having a very well-explained magic system allows. Whereas naming is much more like what I think of as being magic, which is that someone waves their hand and does some mumbo-jumbo and something totally inexplicable happens. And it's never made clear how that worked or why, and it doesn't matter. The point of it is wonder and awe and mystery. And that's what naming is. That's how magic works in Tolkien's world. Like, we don't understand, like, well, Gandalf is a fifth-level wizard, and he, you know, casts the third-level spell, you know, turn flesh to stone or whatever. You know, he just goes, like, lo, Gandalf raised his staff, and the wind blew, and the mountain cracked. You know, it's much more epic and interesting. And so Rothfuss gets to have both of those things in his book.
Mm-hmm. And I think Daniel is saying this perhaps because he hasn't read the book all the way through yet. We haven't really gotten to the really magical magic.
Mm-hmm. So,
but rest assured, it's in there.
Yes. So Patrick, if this whole book had been a Sandersonian treatise on, like, exactly how my magic system works, I would not have enjoyed it, Daniel. But Rothfuss is perhaps the only writer to use such a system that I enjoyed. But I think that more broadly speaking in the fantasy genre, like, magic systems really do appeal to a certain kind of reader, and certain kinds of readers, really want to know, like, the nitty gritty of how something works. That's not why I read fantasy fiction, and I tend to prefer fantasy stories that don't feel the need to explain, how magic works. How do other people feel on this subject?
I enjoy in this book that we get both. That is, I like both. I have no, like, this is me being a bridge again, I guess. I like magic. It doesn't have to be sciencey. It doesn't have to be not sciencey. I like it, period.
Yeah, I'm with Jordana. I like having the range. And I also like that there is still more magic that has been touched on, but not really examined, such as the knots.
Yillish knots,
which are very interesting and mysterious and potentially could go either way. They could be a very scientific magic that could not be.
Mm-hmm. And like fey magic, we don't really understand, like, because Bast can do things that like Quoth can't do.
Mm-hmm. And Filurian. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that to examine. I want to briefly touch on Daniel's first paragraph, the idea that I was suggesting that Quoth's entire backstory is a gotcha. I don't think that's ever what I was arguing. I think that what Rothfuss is going for, and this is what I think I was arguing way back on page 166, is that not that Rothfuss is going to make Quoth's backstory meaningless or everything is then meaningless, but that it's not going to mean what we think it means.
Mm. Yes, and I think Daniel and I would both be satisfied by that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it felt like everything that Quoth had done up to this point was all for nothing, and that's how the book ended, I think we would both be dissatisfied, and I think we'd be right to be.
Mm-hmm.
I stated this back when we discussed it, but I don't think a bad ending ruins a book, because until you get to that ending, you're still enjoying the book.
No.
Yeah, but you can look back at a book that had a bad ending and go, oh.
People remember how you feel more than anything else, how they feel, and they'll remember how a thing made them feel. So
the majority of the book made you feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, but what you're going to take away from it is how you felt when you closed it. That's what you're going to carry with you. Here's an example. I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm going to talk about Far Cry 5, the most recent Far Cry game by Ubisoft. I had a really good time playing that game. I played it for a good 18 hours or so. I thought everything was really tight. I had a lot of fun. I thought it was really funny. And then the ending, which I enjoy, I thought the ending was really good, but the ending retroactively affects the way I felt about the rest of the game, and now I don't think I'll ever play the game again. I liked it, but because of what the ending did to my memories and my feelings about the rest of the game, I'm probably not going to return to it, and it has become a bit lower in my estimation than it was when I was initially playing it. And I think that that can happen to a book, certainly. Mm.
Another example, if I may, the second J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, Star Trek Into Darkness, I was quite enjoying it for the first two-thirds. But the third act really falls apart. I think it totally shits the bed. It becomes very cliche and overly reliant on Wrath of Khan, to the point where, like, even though I enjoyed the first two-thirds of the movie quite a bit, my memory of that movie is sour. And I'm like, ah, that's not such a great movie. Even though, like, I have rewatched it and be like, oh, the first two-thirds of this are pretty good, but the third act really sucks and totally colored my impressions of the rest of the film.
Right. So we can agree that a lousy ending that undermines the meaning of the rest of the experience can color it negatively.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that's not what happens with this book. We've gone really long today. So
we had a lot to talk about.
We sure did.
Call it.
So let's call it. We're a member of the Dork Shelf Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. I've been Nick.
I'm always Jordana.
And I'm Jeremy.
And this has been Paige
of
the Wind.